Podcasting is an astonishing amount of work, so I rely on some great tools to make it easier. One of my staples is Zencaster. They provide a crystal clear sound and gorgeous HD video. I love that it records separate audio and video tracks for the guests and for me, so that everything comes through really clearly, even if there's a lag in the internet. Plus, there's a secured cloud backup so you never lose your interviews. Since I'm often recording from remote places, I love that it's easy to record audio only, as well as audio and video. It's super easy to use, and there's nothing to download aside from your recordings. My guests just click on the link and we start recording. Go to zen.ai/canineconservationists to get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencaster Pro. So again, that's zen.ai/canineconservationists for 30% off. Hello and welcome to the Canine Conservationists podcast, where we're positively obsessed with conservation detection dogs. Join us every week to discuss ecology, odor dynamics, dog behavior, and everything in between. I'm here today with my friend and colleague, Naomi, to talk a little bit about the work that we've been doing together here in Kenya. So go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone, Naomi, and tell us a little bit about how you got started with Action for Cheetahs in Kenya.
First of all, thank you for having me in the podcast, Kayla, and how I started to, well, how I got to know about ACK is I was looking for work in the conservation field in 2021, and I found this job of a dog handler, and then I applied for it, and then I got into the interview. I didn't make it, but the second time I applied for it, I made it. So yeah, that was the first time I ever knew about anything about scats, anything about how they can help cheetahs. Yeah, that's in May 2021.
Gotcha. I didn't realize you'd actually applied for this job twice. So did you go to university for conservation? Did you study it before? When did you get involved in conservation, and what made you kind of look for a job in that field?
Yes. I did my bachelor's in environmental studies and community development, and I've always wanted to do something about wildlife and conservation since there was a Wildcat Diaries, that's in when I was a small kid, and I used to listen to David Attenborough.
Oh, David.
Yeah, and I don't know, it was just something I've always wanted to do, and for a while I deviated into maybe marketing, and finally I got a chance in getting to real conservation. So yeah, I'm really happy that I am here. Yeah,
I also spent some time in communications, I guess, not technically marketing, and it definitely has helped, as you can tell with the podcast here. But yeah, I'm glad I'm not doing communications as my only job anymore. So you kind of fell in love with conservation thanks to David Attenborough and Wildcat Diaries and all that sort of stuff. Did you grow up around nature much? Did people in your family spend time outdoors? Did you go to parks, anything like that when you were a kid?
Yeah, so we've always had a small farm at home. We've always had chicken and goats, and dogs, and I've always liked animals around me. Like, I don't think I could live without an animal. And so I think that helped me a lot in knowing I really wanted it. And also I did a lot of scouting in primary school, and I used to love going to national parks, and I used to save like little snakes on the road, street dogs. So yeah, it's something I grew up doing, and just affirmed to me that yeah, this is you, this is where you belong. Yeah,
that's great. So yeah, what attracted you to the dog team at ACK? Were you just trying to get a job with ACK and with conservation, or were you specifically excited about being on the detection dog team?
No, I wasn't looking, I wasn't looking for a dog job per se. I was looking for conservation, and I wanted to branch maybe into more of research, but I did know I love dogs, and I didn't know, I was curious how dogs would search for scats. It just looked like a foreign thing to me, and so it was like a perfect opportunity to learn and develop in conservation. And so yeah, when I saw it and I saw that I wasn't qualified and applied to it regardless, I just continued wanting to do it, even after the failed application the first time. Mm-hmm. I still did some dog work in that, like I read and I started going to YouTube and I started following some podcasts. Yeah, so yeah, it's something that grew into me, and now I can say, yeah, it's something I can see long term.
Very cool. Yeah, so you grew up with dogs, but you didn't necessarily grow up doing a lot of training. Like, I don't know, in the US we have a lot of like 4-H programs and some of those sorts of things where kids can get involved in training dogs for competition. I didn't do that much as a kid because I didn't have a dog as a kid. But yeah, so you didn't really plan on getting into the dog field. You really came at this from the conservation side.
Yeah, and it's interesting that kids are allowed to train dogs. That's new. I wish we had that here in Kenya. Maybe there is. Maybe I'm just not around it.
Yeah.
But no, we never. For me, the training that I had in mind was security training, where I just saw there was a lot of advertisements and people who did a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I only knew about that side, and mostly it was involved in punishment, and I didn't like it. So I think I wasn't interested because of that part, and realizing that there's more than one training, it's super exciting, because now I get to work with dogs, and I don't have to be afraid of punishing. So yeah, it's yeah. What was the question?
Did you grow up training dogs?
So no, I did not grow up training dogs. I just grew up pets. Yeah, we're mm-hmm. just petting, and the only training I would say we had was the name.
Oh, yes, like name recognition.
Yeah, like my first few dogs are called Tuskers. So yeah, that's the only thing we would have with dogs. Just call them by name and pet them. Yeah.
Yeah. And Tusker is a Kenyan beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tusker is a Kenyan beer that it's mostly for old people.
Yeah, it's kind of a boring lager. It's fine.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Not really like the most interesting beer in the world, but a very typical like international lager.
Yeah, it's more of a, some people like it.
Yeah, but it's fine.
It's tasteless, like a bread called Broadway, so it's not my type.
Yeah, me neither. But it's nice when you're hot.
Yeah, no.
We're just hot and thirsty here at Sambaru. Or maybe that's just me.
Maybe it's the other one that we popped up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, more sangria, please.
Mm.
Okay, so back on track. I'm very distracted by, we've got some lovely, gosh, I always forget what these guys are called. They're not honey creepers. They're not bee eaters. Sunbirds. We've got a sunbird floating around outside our tent. That's just beautiful right now. Okay. So what were kind of your expectations going into starting the conservation dog program here at ACK? What did you think the job was going to be like? And then how has it been different?
So you see the way you get a job and descriptions, and they had like basic descriptions of an intern, where you will do the handling jobs, assisting. And so I thought my job will be less complicated than it is right now. In that I will just have to pick up after the dogs and just walk them and just be a handler to them. Now it's complicated in a good way, since I get to also learn their language. In fact, it's my training.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's and it's also learning everything about dogs, getting to explore new training methods, like the clicker methods, which we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And just basically reading a lot of reading for the research, and taking temperatures and trying to get the data. I'd say it's really exciting in that it's unexpected. And I think that's what I love about the job.
Yeah, that's great. And it's nice to hear that even though it's harder than you expected, you're liking that challenge, because I know that can sometimes be an unwelcome surprise.
Mm-hmm.
What have you found hard about this job? You're a couple weeks, almost a month now, into your first field stint. You've only been in a job for like 2 or 3 months now. So yeah, what have you found most challenging?
I think it's the communication with the dogs. I think because trying to, it's like learning a whole new language with the dogs. Like you think you know English, but then you don't know. So it's like saying stay to a dog. It at first when I was told to command the dogs the first week, and Anthony and Edwin were with me, they would say stay and give the commands and the dogs would be like obedient. And when it came to my turn, they were like, huh? So I had to learn, and I'm still learning intonation and direction and just communicating with the dogs, in that I check the body language with Maddie and Percy. So yeah, it's a big language learning lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and I'm so glad you mentioned, yeah, like, it's not just about the words we use, it's about the intonation, it's about our body language, because, you know, if it was about the fact that dogs understood what a word means, the way that we speak a language, that wouldn't matter quite as much. And I know, like, one of the first things that we talked about when I got here that was helpful, and this isn't so much a verbal language thing, but Percy was having a hard time, the Malinois, with the morning health checks. So why don't you walk us through what the health checks are supposed to look like and all the biting and everything you were getting with Percy and the fact that it wasn't a verbal command that fixed it.
So when I was the first week, we were doing the health checks and I mostly observed, and Edwin would go into the kennel and Percy was, let's say her paws are like a hot spot. So when you touch her paws, she's all bitey. So the health check basically is you go in, you check the teeth, the gum, the eyes, the ears, you massage the dog, check for bumps and maybe cuts and bruises, and then you check the paws, in between the paws and under the paws. So she would, when we told her, when Edwin or me, when we told her to lay down and we checked the paws, she was all bitey. So Edwin has a way with her, and Edwin will say "ntakuliba," which is don't play with me, basically, in English. And Percy would be so calm, but when I got in there and did it, it didn't come out as strong. And Percy would just continue biting. And so when you came up with an idea of why don't you use a ball, I'm like, wait, we can use a toy and it will work. So the next morning I took a ball and I put it in her mouth when she was down, and it was like magic. It was like boom, boom. Like I was so excited, and I would just, the health check would be less stressful, because Maddie is pretty nice, he's a easygoing dog, but for Percy it was a life changer, and thank you for that. Yeah. Until now I use the ball. Yeah,
and to be clear, like, Percy wasn't trying to bite anyone in, like, an aggressive way. She was just, she's very mouthy, you know, as, like, a typical Malinois. She's only about 3 years old, too, but, you know, who knows if she'll grow out of it. yeah, so giving her something to chomp on has been really helpful. Okay, so, yeah, what has kind of continued to surprise or interest you in this job, and what else have you found kind of useful or helpful with having me here? You know, not to like toot my own horn, but like, let's talk about what we've been working on and what's been useful, what we've been working on here.
Yeah, so, well, the ball first to start with. Also, what has been useful? Since you came here, you brought in a different approach to training. So the training was basically having control over the dog. And for me, and I'm a person that, let's say I'm a softy. So I sometimes want to let the dog scroll around, sniff something, get a pee. And so having you here and saying that, yeah, you can do that and still have control over the dog, that was really insightful. And also the having someone to look up to, like a woman, because as a woman's point of view, it was hard for me to manipulate my body while playing with the dogs. And so I would watch the videos on YouTube, but it would feel awkward. Yeah, because I'm surrounded by men, yeah. And watching them play is it's not the same like watching me play. Mine was really bad. So yeah, I think I improved on that and tossing the balls. Not that the others didn't help. They did help. Thank you. And also, I would say books. Yeah. The books are really reinforcing for me, because I like, for example, the book I'm currently reading for Fired Up,
Freaked Out and Frantic.
By Laura. It's about like basically the place I've gotten to. It's about clicker training, and we're doing that with the dogs, and so I'm seeing a lot of improvement in Maddie and Percy. Mostly Maddie, he's really sharp. You like click him and it's like whoop, all ears. And also Percy, working on the distraction, disengagement, and I'd say the possibilities, going to having the opportunities to get into like webinars and learn about maybe hit injuries, and also connecting with the conservation, other conservation dog owners. I think all in all is the open-mindedness. Yeah,
and that makes sense. And it was actually one of the things that I think I talked about in previous episodes about what we're doing here, that kind of surprised me. So generally speaking, in the conservation dog world, we see a lot of, like James Davis talks about this all the time on his show, about really letting the dogs stay wild and not training them too much and not kind of squashing that creativity. And we talk about that on this show as well. And it was interesting and kind of surprising to me when I got here in Kenya. And I think, again, because there's been so much heavy influence from the security industry on these dogs, you were really, in a lot of the training, it was very directed. The dogs were supposed to be really cued into you. You're giving a lot of directional cues, and the dogs had really low independence. And one of the things we've been talking about a lot is kind of the difference in what the job is for a conservation dog versus a security dog, because both dogs can be detection dogs, but a security dog might be searching a really small area, just a vehicle, just a couple suitcases, and they may be searching for something that's potentially dangerous in a potentially dangerous situation. So you need this really tight, almost like a remote controlled car sort of control over a dog, versus what we do, which is really having these dogs work over such large expanses, over such large odor cones as well. And I know that's one of the things we were talking about even today with Maddie, is helping to boost his confidence and his independence a little bit, because he's had so many years of this kind of remote controlled car sort of training, that if you tell him to turn when he's got odor, there's a very good chance he's going to listen to you, and then you could miss a scat. Which is not something I'm used to, and isn't a fault of your past interns or your past trainers or anything. It is just it's the training that's been available to you and the dogs here so far in the country.
Yeah, exactly.
You can expand on that as much as you want, if you want. I was ranting a little.
The challenge, that's the most challenge. And especially not having a direction of how you're supposed to train, because as much as we're getting new experts and coming in and trying to give us a direction, we also would maybe like a direction when you're not around, which will be constant, so that we cannot maybe second guess each other in how we train the dogs, and also not to confuse the dogs.
Yeah, definitely. And I know that's, we've talked about this on our morning walks almost every day. Like, that's one of the things that I think we're all worried about, is making sure that, I'm only here for 6 or 7 weeks, and then Rachel and Heather are both here for about a month each. And hopefully things will be relatively consistent between the three canine conservationist ladies. But, trying to keep this learning going forward and keep the consistency for both you and Edwin and the dogs and any future interns going forward is definitely going to be a big continuing goal for the ACK dog program.
Yeah, definitely. And I hope for the best for that, because I would like, personally, I think we make a good teaching team, and I would like someone to maybe show you do this is wrong, because when you're coming in, someone fresh like me, knowing zero about dogs, it will be nice to show another person the correct thing about the dog. So yeah, I'm really ready for getting to expand the program and also making the team stronger. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And that is definitely actually a huge asset of, you know, where this program is at right now is because people come in with maybe a lot of really strong conservation knowledge, but so far it seems like most of the interns that have been hired have less of the dog knowledge. You actually do have this really cool opportunity as, you know, a more senior person on the ACK dog team to really help bring them forward in a way where they don't have a lot of preconceived notions about how this is supposed to go or what it's supposed to look like, and you can really help shape that, which is cool.
Yeah, yeah. Because weird enough, like I wanted to do purely maybe conservation, and I still want to do a master's in conservation. But getting to this job this far, I'm thinking of doing animal behavior.
Oh,
seriously,
cool.
Yeah. So you influenced me. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. Yeah, it's such a fascinating field, and I think there's a lot of overlap between, you know, the fields of conservation and applied animal behavior and ethology, and, you know, being able to conserve a species to some degree means needing to be able to understand that species' behavior.
Yep.
And we can use the dogs to understand that with the cheetahs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of lost the thread there, but yeah, animal behavior and conservation don't have to feel totally separate, I think.
True. I think they're completely interlined, yeah, mm-hmm. in a sort of way, because for us, we're dog handlers, yeah, mm-hmm. and we work with cheetahs, so it's like the same thing. So I'm not reaching out of the box for what I say I want to be an animal behavior and still a conservationist, just mm-hmm. like yourself, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So what, you know, not what about what have the dogs taught you so far? Like, what have you learned from Percy and Maddie about, you know, working with other dogs or even working with people about the capabilities of dogs?
Yep.
Yeah.
So I think I mentioned this in my interview. I said my weakness is being impatient. I'm a really not a patient person. Mm-hmm. So getting to have to slow down and maybe repeat a command maybe 3 times, 4 times, it was really frustrating for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog doing what I would not want the dog to do, it's also frustrating, but I learned to cool my jets out and just breathe, just usa, I guess. And yeah, I think the strongest thing that they have taught me is patience. Yeah.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And even like what we were talking about the other day. So Percy tends to like to chase things.
Yep.
So we've been working a little bit on her disengaging from hyracs, which are kind of, think like, for anyone who doesn't know what a hyrax is, they're one of elephant's closest relatives, but they look nothing like an elephant. It's like a giant tailless squirrel. They're fat. They look like a wombat or like a small capybara. They're adorable and they're all over the place. So we've been working with Percy on disengaging from them and then reengaging with her handler using some stuff that's kind of similar to like Sarah Strumming's worked up protocol where, you know, first she needs to eat and then she needs to respond to cues and all of that around these hyraxes. And the first time you went out and tried, I think you had just been reading the Fired Up, Frantic and Freaked Out.
Yeah.
And I heard the clicker and then you came back and you were like, Kayla, this isn't working. She wouldn't even eat, you know?
Yeah, it was horrible. I think so I jumped in too deep and I was looking for a distraction. Yeah, so we started working with her outside the kennel. And I took the clicker and the bait and I would throw it to her and she would come back. She was really good.
Mm-hmm.
There was no distraction. So I was like, let's up this notch a bit. And we went up the cliff and hyraxes were all over the place and she was and so I tried to calm her down, but she still wanted to go to the hyrax, so it was really challenging. And the worst thing is I didn't bring a leash. So I came out crying. I'm like, no, I need your help. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so I think one of the things that like I've also learned, because I'm also not a naturally patient person in dog training, is it's not always about, sometimes like, yes, yeah, sometimes I go too fast or I get impatient because the dog doesn't respond to my cues quickly enough, but I also tend towards the same mistake that you just described of progressing too quickly in your training and you know, lumping instead of splitting with our training. So, you know, what we did the next training session is we went during a hotter part of the day when the Hyraxes are less active, and we were a little bit further away, and we only had the Hyrax rock on one side of us so that we kind of knew where the Hyraxes would be and we could move away if we needed. And that session went a lot better, right?
It was perfect. In fact, I will say perfect. Way better than mine. Well, I guess that's why you call the expat.
Yeah. So, you know, patience is definitely a big thing we've all been learning from our dogs, and we all will continue learning forever. Uh-huh. So what are you looking forward to professionally in the coming weeks and months with this program with ACK with the dogs?
Professionally, I want to become better at my job as a dog handler now. Mm-hmm. The team does not need experts coming in, and maybe I be the expert or we be the expert, me and my team. And yeah, I think that's maybe in, I'm thinking 3 years from now.
Okay.
Yeah, so do that, and also upgrading my studies. Yeah. And also, of course, getting into webinars, online and in person. Mm-hmm. And yeah,
are there any areas, like if you and Edwin both stay around, and you know, this, you kind of subdivided as leaders within the program, is there any areas of growth that you're most excited about, or kind of sub areas within the scat dog program that excite you the most?
Yeah, I'm excited about the, of course, the canine unit, trying to maintain the 2 dogs we have currently, mm-hmm. and hopefully expand. Mm-hmm. But before that, I think we need to work more on our current interns and handlers, and just boost up our skills so that we can maybe formulate a method that ensures that the rest of the interns, the next generation, will come in and they will do the same practice that is best for the dog and not best for us. Yeah, I think that's what mostly I'm excited about.
Hey, I'm Taylor, and I'm the handler for Kepler, a mini Aussie in training for muscle detection work. Before canine conservationist, I didn't even know about all the possibilities with dogs in conservation. Now I've jumped feet first into the training. I wouldn't have been able to without the support I gained from being a part of the podcast Patreon. My favorite support comes from the group calls. I've been able to get alert training help and felt completely welcome, even though I'm a complete novice to this kind of training. The group calls also help guide my questions for my one-on-ones with Kayla. The information is invaluable and the community is kind. I hope to see you there.
Yeah, that makes sense. You definitely seem like you are very focused on kind of the welfare of the dogs and the systems in place and what to do to ensure that the dogs get the best training and the best welfare going forward into the future. Not that the past interns weren't worried about that necessarily.
Oh, no.
What I think has happened to some degree is just every time people leave, some knowledge leaves with them. And there have been some things that just aren't written down or aren't shared well yet within the organization. You know, yesterday you and I on our walk, was it yesterday? Mm. 2 days ago, we were talking about, oh gosh, how cool would it be to kind of have a little manual for each dog talking about their personality and talking about their sensitivities and their pressures and their reinforcers, mm-hmm. To make sure that those little bits of knowledge don't get lost from one person to the next.
Yeah, exactly. Like the only, I'd say, the knowledge that I got about Percy in videos is that Warriors, our
retired dog.
Yeah, our retired dog is that her best place for getting rubbed is behind the ears. So I was telling you is that if we had a manual for each dog, for Maddie, for Percy, for any dog that comes in that says Maddie is sensitive, don't shout too much, Percy is a bullet, be careful, something like that, it will reduce the time. For example, like I took 1 month to know something which I would have known in seconds reading. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's something that it will definitely boost up. The interns are coming in and they'll be more confident in what they're doing, and they would be less drawn into the fire per se. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's one of the ideas that I would like to have. Yeah.
yeah, definitely. Well, and I think again, like some of the stuff that we've been talking about as far as these observations with these dogs, like especially because you and Edwin and other interns haven't come in already been super experienced detection dog trainers, it would take you longer to figure these things out on your own versus if someone came in and they had 10 years of experience training and working with a variety of dogs, they may be able to pick up on some of these personality quirks or preferences of the dogs more quickly. But that's not how this program has been set up. So yeah, that totally makes sense. What support do you see as potentially being really helpful for the ACK scat dog teams going forward? What do you think you need to kind of achieve all of these goals?
Well, definitely you. You guys, so the you and Heather and
Rachel
and the Leo who came in past. So I think yes, it's good and it's great that you're coming in and coming out and giving us all this knowledge, which I think we should have a big book and write some of them. But yeah, it's great that we're having experts that come in and have worked with other canine dogs, conservation, which in particular. And it's a good thing because it helps us view conservation from other industries. It's only conservation. So I think the support they're having right now for the expert, it's really good. Also for the opportunities to get into webinars, opportunities to get the books that we have in right now and reading. And basically also the social media, it's a really good opportunity. Slack. Yeah, you introduce us to Slack and get into the conservation CDDs, owners who are there, and maybe also it's like it's good that when maybe you have a question and you can just post it there and get answers and maybe videos. So yeah, I think the support we need is currently what we're having, and maybe more.
Yeah, definitely always more. And you know, I think I've talked about this again on the show before, and we've talked about this where, like, before I came here, I wasn't totally sure if I had enough expertise and knowledge to come and help yet. And like, huge shout out to Paul Bunker and Nathan Hall, who both of whom have helped answer some questions that I've had while I've been here, you know, as we're tackling some of these questions. And I'm glad that you mentioned as well, like, you know, we've been circling around this, but learning specifically from people with conservation dog experience. Like, for example, one of the biggest problems we've been having with the dogs lately has been these off-target alerts, where the dogs are alerting to caracal and leopard scat instead of just cheetah scat. And that's a pretty common problem in the conservation dog world, but there are kind of specific questions of saliency as far as the diet of these animals and, you know, whether or not zoo and captive animals are the same as wild animals. And a lot of those questions just... Again, not that like a police canine handler or a security dog handler or a search and rescue dog handler doesn't have to deal with similar stuff, but the conservation dog field is so so broad, but also so unique. And some of these odor questions in particular, that I think, I'm always learning about it too. And this has been a big learning experience for me as well with some of these questions. I think let's close out with, why don't you tell us a little bit about our practice search this morning, and kind of so what the setup is for a linear search here and why we have so many people involved and kind of some of the unique challenges of working with off-leash scat detection dogs in Africa.
Well, the rumor is true. We have lions. So in the morning, we did a linear search, transect, this transect, and the transect was 100 by 200 meters. And I took Maddie because he's more experienced. And we started, well, we were four people in total. There was you and Cosmas, who were the midpoint. Yeah. And we had Timothy, who was the left wing, I think the left spotter, and Kelvin was the right. So the work of those, Kevin and Timothy, were to direct you of where you should not go to. You should not go to, because you've already started the area. So my difficulty starting off was the direction. I kept trying to go straight, and I'll find myself maybe to left or to the right. Also controlling Maddie, because you're not supposed to get over 100 meters. Mm-hmm. Then coming back, turning and making that
mm-hmm. transect.
Yeah, it was hard to calculate the steps. You are supposed to have 100, so it was really good to have the communication for the radio. Mm-hmm. I think the worst of the worst thing is the wind.
Mm.
There was no wind, and I think we chose the wrong number. We should have done maybe shorter distances, but anyway, we got the skirt, so that's the only thing that matters. And I think the challenge, did I mention the challenge? No. The challenge maybe is trying to balance everything, trying to balance the voice that tells you turn, trying to balance your dog telling you, hey, I have found something, let me go look at it, and trying to balance how is the weather, where's the wind going to, why don't we have any wind, and trying to balance, hey, you're not supposed to go behind Kevin, you are supposed to go in front of him. Yeah, everything was it was juggling. Good thing I'm a woman, because I was able to for a while. yeah
it's a search strategy I actually haven't really seen done before. And so Kelvin and Timothy are on the edges, partially as kind of spotters and boundaries on either side of this like 200 meter wide strip that was a kilometer long, but they're also kind of helping to spot for particularly elephants are the thing that we're worried about here and now, because where we are specifically, the lions and hyenas aren't likely to be around that time of day, although they could be. And depending on where else you could be worried about hippos or, you know, all sorts of other critters that could be very, very dangerous to you and your dog. And one of the things we were talking about this morning is that I think in our last week or so here, we're going to also do some practice with like spotting and figuring out how to walk in a straight line. Yeah. Because one of the things that's unusual to me about this setup, and I'm a little curious at some point to sit down with someone who's been in the program for longer and hear exactly how it came about and where it's from, is you as the handler don't have the GPS in your hand, and you're being directed by radio by the person in the midpoint who is watching the dog's GPS collar on their handheld GPS, and they're kind of trying to direct the dog and handler back and forth across this 200 meter wide transect in a linear direction down a 1 kilometer runway, basically. Yeah. And generally, like when I have done linear transects, I would actually have one super long transect that's perpendicular to the wind. Mm-hmm. So like my 1 kilometer long transect, you would just walk that, and that would be perpendicular to the wind rather than crisscrossing across it. I don't know if that makes any sense to anyone who can't see my hand gestures. I'm not even sure if it makes sense to Naomi right now. But yeah, it's a really interesting search setup, and it seems like definitely a big part of it is kind of for this wildlife safety. Because one of the things that is wild here is that even though it's not that dense of scrub and mm-hmm. the trees aren't that tall, nope. You can't see elephants until they are way so too true. Close to you.
So true. It's like the time I was going to put the skirt uh-huh. and I'm walking. Well, earlier we've been told that there were elephants around.
Yeah.
But when I went to look with the binoculars on the rock, there was nothing. So I'm walking 7 meters away from the camp, and suddenly I'm hearing cracks from the trees. Mm-hmm. Looking back, big elephants, big bulls. So yeah, it's hard. It's so weird. It's easy to see them, but it's not.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's funny because again, like elephants are also just mega dangerous, yep. Which I think a lot of us in North America may forget. That you know, we see them in zoos and we think they're these lovely, gentle giants. They've got matriarchal societies and they have these amazing migrations and they take care of their babies and they mourn their dead and they will also kill you. Yeah, and apparently they also hate dogs.
Oh yeah, that's a weird thing I learned coming here. It's like they hate dogs. I'm like, why?
Yeah, I don't know. I bet dogs chase them or something. They probably
maybe they hate cannibals.
Probably. Maybe it's not dogs specifically, but more kind of dogs and hyenas and jackals and everything falls in the same category. So anyway, and, you know, I think this also just underlines, you know, how many things as a handler you have to learn. And, you know, you asked at the end of the search if I had any feedback for you. And I was like, no, like we were trying to figure out the radios and the GPS and there was no wind. So you and Maddie missed a couple scats, but like, it wasn't because of an error you made. You were following the search strategy and there wasn't enough odor available for Maddie to find it. And I think that's something that we talk about and we think about all the time, where like if your dog misses something, that's information about the conditions as much, if not more so, than it is information about your dog. And trying to circle around and cue the dog and prompt them and help get them into the odor cone when something is known doesn't help in the long term when something is unknown. So I know it sucks to miss stuff, but I don't think you did anything wrong. I think like the search today, it was hectic, it was hard, but that is exactly why we asked to do a practice full search before we were going out to do a survey.
But we did get a treat. We saw the
yes path. Oh my god, yeah, tell us about it.
So at the end, picture this, there's a scat where Kayla and Cosmas are standing and it's the end point, and Maddie is way ahead of me because I had to remove something from my shoe. He's way ahead of me and I saw him sit, and I'm like, huh, maybe he's sitting waiting for me. So when I get there, he stands up and we continue going. I'm like, okay. And then you tell me that there's a scat there. Maybe take him back and see if it will indicate. And he did. Anyway, after that, we rewarded. And someone saw a puff adder.
Yes.
A big, beautiful puff adder.
Yeah, a huge puff adder. And so where we kind of were, so everything here is pretty scrubby again. But we were actually standing next to, it looked like these giant, well, I guess very small canyons from a flash flood or something. Like they were probably 2 meters deep and maybe a meter wide. So you could jump over them pretty easily. And they were kind of crisscrossed all around. It was like if you were Paul Bunyan near the Grand Canyon. and we looked down and there was a huge, fat, happy puff adder in the bottom. Giant, scary, triangle-shaped head. And she was so fat. So it was pretty cool to see. That was our first snake we've seen, and it was a nice distance away.
Yeah, really nice.
Nobody was really at risk from her, and because they are apparently one of the deadliest snakes in Africa. Oh. Learned that today. Yeah.
Oh, it's not the black mamba.
Yeah, I think the puff adders actually kill more people.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, although it's mostly necrosis and infection afterwards. It's not actually because the venom is going to kill you in like the first couple hours. It's actually like afterwards. Apparently, I'm quoting from Timothy, who was like reading Wikipedia. So maybe we'll fact check this later. Anyway, Nomi, is there anything you want to add? Is there anything other you want people to know about the ACK program or you or anything like that?
Maybe about the puff adder.
Yeah.
Weird enough, I did a project about snakes in Baringo, and today is the first day I'm seeing a snake.
Really?
Yeah. For the 3 months I did the project, that I didn't see any snakes.
Oh my gosh.
Because mostly we did like interviews of the victims.
Oh.
Yeah, we didn't really go into the field to catch them. Yeah. So it was, I guess it was a treat for me.
Okay. So hold on. You can't just like end on that project. What was that project about? What are some of the snakes they were running into? Yeah. What were like the injuries they had? What? Oh my God, that sounds so intense.
So the project was actually, it was basically about a snake bite in Baringo. And
where's Baringo?
Yeah, it's in Kenya.
Is it a park? Is it like a national park? Is it a county?
Baringo is a county, yeah. Baringo,
okay.
Baringo County. So it's really known for snakes.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like I think the first county for cases of snake bites.
Okay.
And so the project was about getting the victims compensated and how many victims are there and if it's a really big issue. Mm-hmm. So we went to do mostly interviews with the communities and we'll go and we will find most of the victims, they had lost their fingers, their hands, their legs were still numbing. They were walking. Their walking is different. Some even were paralyzed. And it was just getting to know, did you get compensated? And most of them weren't. And at that time, KWS, which is the Kenya Wildlife Service, mm-hmm. they weren't compensating for snake bites.
Oh.
Yes, even for livestock, because most of them also had their livestock, cows and goats and the shots. Yeah, they were, yeah. So it was a three-month thing, and I was hoping to get a snake, maybe pass by me, because mostly they were, I was actually told that the spitting cobra will run after you.
I have been told the same thing, that spitting cobra will actually pursue you.
Yeah, like it will be in a hole, it will be resting, no. and it will be coming to you.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Do we know if that's true?
I believe the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it is.
Because also spitting cobra have range weapons, which most snakes don't.
Yeah.
You know, like most snakes, you kind of have to be unlucky enough to pass close by enough and then mm-hmm. step on them and they'll just bite you. But like spitting cobra can get you from a couple meters away.
Yes.
Which is not fair.
Yeah, it's not fair. It's so scary. And you can't, like, you're not even close to them. Why? Anyway, so.
And they can't even eat you. You know, like. That's we've been joking a lot about if I get killed by anything here, we have to tell all my friends and family it was a leopard, because that's the coolest thing to get killed by in Africa, in my opinion. And at least a leopard's gonna eat me, versus there's something really sad about getting killed by a hippo.
Or a camel.
Or a camel.
Or a hyrax.
Or a hyrax.
Yeah.
And it's not even gonna eat you.
No.
And like the spitting cobra, it's not even gonna eat you.
No.
It's too small.
Just like, ta.
Yeah, it's just killing you for no good reason. I mean, not for no good reason. I know it's trying to protect itself and whatever, but...
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. So, yeah, so you're interviewing these snake bite victims. Like, do you have any... So you were hoping to see snakes. You never really got to.
Yeah.
Did you have any stories that were particularly impactful?
Just that I learned that the sand snake, I think...
Mm-hmm.
Forgot the name, damn it. The sand snake is though like friendly and
the sand boas, right?
Yeah. And they will sit next to the fire and listen to people talk.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I love that.
And most of the people there, they will keep them at pets
cool.
Because they also eat mice.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So it was at the same time I thought that. Coming to Baringo, I thought that most of the people hated snakes because they bit it. And then coming to know that, some love them and they put them as pets. So, yeah, uh-huh. It was, I think a beautiful thing.
Yeah, no, I love that. Especially, yeah, because snakes are, they're so misunderstood and they're so feared. And it's tough out there being a snake, man. So, yeah, I love that. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, well, I've already taken up more than enough of your time. I guess we have to get back to work now. But Naomi, thank you very much for coming on the show.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me in the podcast. And I hope we meet again while we are both big things.
Yeah, heck yeah. Yeah, I hope one day we get to meet up at some big international conservation dog conference and you're going to have like 15 interns that I can consider my intellectual grandchildren.
Oh, yeah, that would be lovely.
Yeah, that's the dream.
And I think half of them will be girls because, you know.
Obviously. Yeah. We're building a feminist conservation dog empire out here in Kenya.
Yeah.
Don't tell Edwin. Okay, everyone, thank you so much for listening. I hope you are feeling inspired to get outside and be a canine conservationist in whatever way suits your passions and skill set. You can join Patreon over at patreon.com/canineconservationist. You can find show notes, transcripts, donate to Canine Conservationists, buy cool merch, all that good stuff over at canineconservationists.org. Until next time.